In a literary landscape dominated by psychological thrillers, David Ellis's Look Closer stands out as a masterclass in misdirection and calculated revenge. This New York Times bestseller has captivated readers since its 2022 release, earning praise from Stephen King, who called it the most ingeniously plotted thriller I've read in years. The novel's intricate narrative structure has made it a favorite among book clubs nationwide, with its exploration of betrayal, justice, and the thin line between victim and perpetrator resonating deeply with readers. What makes Look Closer particularly compelling is how it forces us to question our own moral compass. Would we side with someone who commits murder if their motivation feels justified? Let's dive into this labyrinth of deception where nothing is as it first appears. Simon Dobius appears to be the quintessential law professor, brilliant but unassuming, preferring casual clothes to sport coats and irreverent blog posts to academic footnotes. When we first meet him, he's being criticized by his colleague Professor Anshuman Bindra for not looking professorial enough, despite being quoted in a Supreme Court opinion. Shortly after, Simon faces pressure from Dean Martin Comstock to withdraw his application for full professor in favor of Reed Southern, whose father has donated millions to the school. The dean subtly blackmails Simon with knowledge of his past involvement in a court case from 12 years ago. Simon's life takes a dramatic turn when he spots Lauren, a woman from his past, on Michigan Avenue. We soon learn they share a complicated history. Lauren was once a paralegal at his father's law firm when Simon was just out of high school. Their paths cross again at the Grace Country Club's 4th of July festivities, where Simon deliberately attends, hoping to accidentally run into her. Lauren is now married to wealthy Conrad Beckencourt, while Simon is married to Vicky. What begins as coffee meetings quickly escalates into a passionate affair. Simon keeps a green journal documenting his feelings for Lauren, writing that their connection feels like the birth of something. He purchases burner phones, pink for Lauren, green for himself, to facilitate their secret communications. As their relationship deepens, Simon finds himself torn between his growing obsession with Lauren and his commitment to Vicky, who helped him through his grief after his mother's suicide. The complexity of Simon's character emerges gradually. He's a man haunted by his past. His brilliant law professor mother suffered a severe stroke, leaving her wheelchair-bound. His father then began an affair with Lauren, who eventually stole $6 million from the family, leaving them financially ruined and unable to afford proper care for Simon's mother. This led to her suicide by overdosing on pain medication. Later, Simon's father was found murdered in his swimming pool in St. Louis, and though Simon was the primary suspect, he was never charged. Simon's narrative voice shifts between reasoned analysis and emotional turmoil. "Sometimes I let things bother me more than they should," he admits, a phrase that takes on darker meaning as the story unfolds. His calculated exterior masks a man capable of meticulous planning and cold-blooded revenge, revealed when he reflects on his high school tormentor Mitchell Kitchens, whom he strategically brought down by spiking the Gatorade that Mitchell routinely stole from him. Lauren Betancourt, née Lemoine, emerges as a complex figure whose true nature remains elusive throughout the narrative. When we first encounter her through Simon's perspective, she's portrayed as a beautiful, captivating woman who once broke his heart and has now re-entered his life. Their rekindled relationship quickly intensifies, with Lauren eventually proposing they get married, shocking Simon with her declaration, "I don't want you to be a cheater. I don't want to be a cheater either. I want us to get married." However, as the narrative unfolds, multiple versions of Lauren emerge. To Simon's father, Ted, she was a young paralegal who became his mistress before disappearing with over $6 million from the family account. To Conrad Betancourt, she was a wife 20 years younger than his first wife, who married him for his money and was in the process of being divorced when she died. Conrad's ex-wife, Cassandra, describes Lauren as quite the little Cupid doll who stole him from me and was likely looking for her next sugar daddy. Lauren's manipulation extends to her relationship with Simon. She pushes him to file for divorce before his 10th anniversary with Vicky, dismissing his concern that this would prevent Vicky from accessing trust money. She has no right to that money, Lauren argues, suggesting their marriage was never based on love, but rather financial security. She uses sexual manipulation to persuade Simon to promise he'll file immediately. The most shocking revelation about Lauren comes when Jane Burke discovers her fingerprints on the champagne bottle used in Ted Dobias's murder. This confirms she was not just a thief who destroyed Simon's family financially, but potentially his accomplice in petricide. Lauren's calculated return to Simon's life appears less coincidental and more part of a long-term strategy that ultimately led to her own demise. In death, Lauren becomes a puzzle for Detective Jane Burke to solve. The crime scene reveals she fought against her killer. Broken painted fingernails indicate her struggle against the noose that killed her. A pink burner phone hidden under a small table contains text messages suggesting she was killed by a lover who couldn't handle rejection. But as Jane discovers, the carefully staged evidence may be concealing a far more complex truth. Initially presented as Simon's supportive wife who works as a social worker helping domestic violence victims, Vicky gradually emerges as perhaps the most calculating character in the novel. Her compassionate exterior, helping abused women at Safe Haven shelter, caring deeply for her nieces after her sister's suicide, masks a woman with a mysterious past and ruthless determination. Early hints of Vicky's true nature appear when she meets with Private Detective Rambo, who confirms she's been using the stolen identity of Vicky Lenier, a girl who disappeared from West Virginia at age 17. The best lies are the ones closest to the truth, she notes, explaining she chose this alias because it matches her real first name and parallels her own history of leaving home at 17. Vicky's motivations become clearer when she meets with investment advisor Christian Newsom, hoping to gain control of Simon's $21 million trust fund after their 10th wedding anniversary. Their professional relationship quickly becomes sexual, with Vicky using her body to secure Christian's cooperation in her financial schemes. What Christian doesn't realize is that Vicky has selected him specifically for a more sinister purpose. The full extent of Vicky's manipulation is revealed when she confesses to Christian. Simon did it. He killed his father. I didn't try to stop him, and I married him anyway. I married him for his money. This shocking admission is actually part of her elaborate plan to frame Christian for Lauren's murder. She later tells Christian, I never intended to let you near my money. I just need you to kill Lauren Betancourt. Vicky's surveillance of Lauren's house, her purchase of matching Grim Reaper costumes and identical boots for both Christian and Simon, and her meticulous planning of the murder reveal her as the mastermind behind an intricate revenge plot. She manipulates Christian into believing they're setting up Simon while actually planning to kill Christian and frame him for Lauren's murder. The final twist in Vicky's story comes when we learn her true motivation wasn't just financial gain, but revenge against Christian, real name Nick Karachi, for his involvement in her sister Monica's drug addiction and death. I'd planned to kill Nick myself for what he did to Monica, she confesses, revealing that her entire scheme was orchestrated to avenge her sister while simultaneously helping Simon achieve his own revenge against Lauren. Detective Jane Burke serves as the novel's moral compass, persistently questioning the convenient narrative presented by the evidence. From her first appearance at Lauren's murder scene, Jane demonstrates sharp analytical skills and intuition, immediately recognizing the crime as highly personal rather than a robbery or sexual assault. Jane methodically builds her case, connecting Simon to both Lauren and his father's murder through careful investigation. She discovers Simon and Lauren's high school connection, learns about Lauren's affair with Simon's father and theft of the family's money, and pieces together how these events led to Simon's mother's suicide. When interviewing Simon's former high school tormentor, Mitchell Kitchens, she uncovers Simon's capacity for calculated revenge, how he spiked Mitchell's Gatorade with a banned substance before a crucial wrestling tournament, destroying his athletic career. What distinguishes Jane from other characters is her unwavering commitment to the truth, even when the evidence points to a convenient conclusion. While her colleagues are satisfied with blaming Nick Carracci for Lauren's murder based on the seemingly perfect evidence, Jane remains skeptical, noting suspicious elements: the carefully moved pink phone at the crime scene, the suspiciously perfect cell location data, and inconsistencies in the text messages. Jane's persistence leads her to uncover the connection between Lauren and Simon's father's murder, finding Lauren's fingerprints on the champagne bottle from the crime scene. Despite this breakthrough, Jane recognizes that Simon has orchestrated events too perfectly to be convicted. In their final confrontation, she tells Simon she knows he committed all three murders, his father, Lauren, and Nick Carracci, but admits he's going to walk from the whole damn thing. When Simon calls her a smart detective, she refuses to take it as a compliment, maintaining her moral integrity even in defeat. Christian Newsom cultivates the polished veneer of a Goldman Sachs investment advisor, complete with perfectly tailored suits and an encyclopedic knowledge of market trends. However, beneath this carefully constructed facade lies Nick Carracci, a methodical con man who has perfected the art of seducing wealthy married women. His standard operation involves a sophisticated long game, identifying vulnerable targets, orchestrating seemingly chance meetings, and gradually positioning himself as both romantic interest and financial savior. His partnership with Gavin, a master forger and identity fabricator, has proven lucrative through six previous cons, with Gavin creating immaculate paper trails and financial documentation in exchange for 10% of the proceeds. Their relationship maintains strict compartmentalization. Gavin never meets the targets and knows them only by numbers, with Vicky designated as number 7. Nick's approach to Vicky represents a significant departure from his established pattern. Instead of his usual strategy of engineering a divorce settlement, he sees an opportunity for a much bigger score: direct access to the entire $21 million trust fund that Vicky will control after her 10th wedding anniversary. His preparation is meticulous. He leases a luxury penthouse in Tribeca and furnishes it with carefully chosen status symbols, including an 8500 titanium grooming set, a rare Patek Philippe watch collection, and original artwork. Each item is selected to project success while avoiding the appearance of ostentation that might trigger suspicion. The situational irony deepens as Nick conducts his own background investigation into the Fosters, believing he's gathering leverage. When he uncovers the violent murder of Simon's father, he views it as valuable intelligence, never suspecting this discovery is actually part of Vicky's careful orchestration. His professional confidence, built on years of successful cons, creates a fatal blind spot. Even as he agrees to an escalation from fraud to murder, planning Lauren's death to accelerate access to the trust, he remains convinced he's the puppet master rather than the puppet. Nick's final scene unfolds with dramatic irony on Halloween night, after he believes he successfully staged Lauren's murder. Vicky's unexpected arrival at his apartment initially seems like a celebration of their scheme's success. As they share expensive bourbon, his own special reserve, the master manipulator fails to notice his own manipulation. The drowsiness he attributes to alcohol is actually from a carefully measured cocktail of drugs. His last conscious moments bring a horrible clarity: the silencer pressed under his chin, Vicky's intimate knowledge of his true identity, and the devastating realization that he, the consummate con artist, has been fatally outmaneuvered by his intended mark. His final words, "How long have you known?" are met with Vicky's cold farewell: "Goodbye, Nick Carracci." The events of Halloween night represent the culmination of multiple schemes converging in a perfectly orchestrated crime. The narrative deliberately obscures exactly who did what until the final chapters, when the full extent of Simon and Vicky's collaboration is revealed. Nick, wearing a Grim Reaper costume provided by Vicky, approaches Lauren's house, believing he's executing their plan to frame Simon. Meanwhile, Simon watches from a distance, thinking, "Thank you for your service, Christian, even if you didn't realize you were doing it for me." After Nick leaves Lauren's darkened house, Simon approaches, wearing his own Grim Reaper costume over an Obama mask for a double layer of anonymity. Inside Lauren's house, Simon discovers she's already dead, hanging from the second-floor banister with her head unnaturally askew. Wearing a skin-tight cat costume with makeup and painted whiskers, he carefully stages the crime scene, creating an elaborate text message exchange between two phones, one pink and one green, to fabricate evidence of a confrontation between Nick and Lauren. He deliberately presses his muddy size 13 Paul Roy Peak Explorer boots against the front door to leave distinct footprints. Places Lauren's pink phone under a small table to make it look like it slid there during a struggle, and knocks over a vase and photo to suggest a struggle. Later that night, Vicky arrives at Nick's apartment and kills him with a silenced gun, staging the scene to look like a suicide, placing the gun in his left hand, planting Valium pills on the floor, and removing traces of drugs from his bourbon glass. Simon then arrives at Nick's apartment, finding him dead in what appears to be a staged suicide. He deliberately places the Grim Reaper costume on Nick's bed and positions the boots near his feet to look casually discarded, sending a pre-written suicide text from the green burner phone before turning it off. The elaborate choreography of Halloween Night reveals how Simon and Vicky work together to eliminate both Lauren and Nick while creating evidence that would implicate Nick as Lauren's killer, who then committed suicide out of remorse. Their perfect crime is designed to close both cases neatly, leaving them free to move forward with their separate lives. Look Closer challenges readers to consider the fine line between justice and revenge, forcing us to confront uncomfortable questions about morality and retribution. Simon and Vicky's actions are undeniably criminal. They methodically plan and execute two murders. Yet the narrative presents their victims as arguably deserving of their fates. Lauren destroyed Simon's family and potentially helped murder his father, while Nick was a predatory con man who contributed to the death of Vicky's sister. Simon articulates this moral justification when reflecting on killing his father and Lauren. "I don't feel moral satisfaction, but I view it as justified. They declared war on my mother and me by killing her, and I responded in kind." This eye-for-an-eye philosophy permeates the novel, suggesting that when traditional justice fails, victims might be justified in taking matters into their own hands. The novel further complicates this moral landscape through Detective Jane Burke, who represents the legal system's limitations. Despite her intelligence and persistence, she cannot bring Simon and Vicky to justice because they've orchestrated their crimes too perfectly. When she confronts Simon with her knowledge of his guilt, she admits he's going to walk from the whole damn thing, highlighting how the legal system can fail when faced with sufficiently clever criminals. Perhaps most tellingly, the novel ends with Simon and Vicky refusing to keep any of the money that motivated so much of the plot. Simon donates his entire inheritance to charities supporting causes related to stroke, suicide prevention, domestic violence, and runaway youth. Vicky refuses to take any money for herself, instead celebrating the anonymous $1 million donation Simon made to her shelter. This rejection of financial gain suggests their actions were ultimately motivated by a desire for justice rather than greed, complicating our moral judgment of their crimes. Throughout Look Closer, characters engage in various forms of deception, lying to others, manipulating evidence, and perhaps most significantly, deceiving themselves about their own motivations and moral standing. Simon presents himself as a principled law professor who values justice, yet methodically plans and executes multiple murders. His carefully constructed persona of academic integrity serves as a shield, allowing him to move through society undetected while harboring violent intentions. Vicky portrays herself as a compassionate social worker helping abuse victims while orchestrating elaborate schemes of revenge. Her professional role provides both cover and access to vulnerable individuals she can manipulate. Nick believes he's the master manipulator while being manipulated himself, his overconfidence becoming his ultimate weakness. The novel explores how people justify their darkest actions through rationalization and selective moral reasoning. Simon frames his murders as justified retribution for his mother's death, constructing an elaborate moral framework where vigilante justice becomes not just acceptable but necessary. His academic background enables him to intellectualize his actions, viewing them through the lens of philosophical justice rather than criminal behavior. Vicky views her killing of Nick as righteous vengeance for her sister, building an entire alternate identity around this mission. She compartmentalizes her actions, separating her role as protector from that of killer. Even Nick justifies his cons by targeting wealthy people he believes won't be truly harmed by his actions, creating artificial boundaries around his crimes to maintain his self-image as someone who isn't truly evil. This psychological complexity extends to the narrative structure itself, with unreliable narrators presenting conflicting versions of events. The reader must constantly question whose perspective to trust and what information is being withheld. The journal entries attributed to Simon are particularly deceptive, as we eventually learn some were written by Vicky to manipulate Nick. These layers of unreliability mirror the character's own self-deception, creating a narrative where truth becomes increasingly elusive. Each character's version of events is colored by their own biases, trauma, and need for self-justification. The novel's title, Look Closer, serves as both instruction and warning. Nothing is as it first appears, and only by examining the details can we uncover the truth. The title itself becomes increasingly ironic as the story progresses, suggesting that the closer we look, the more we realize how complex and distorted reality becomes through the lens of human perception and self-deception. The characters' elaborate deceptions are matched by their capacity for self-delusion, creating a psychological hall of mirrors where truth and lies become almost indistinguishable. This makes the novel not just a crime thriller, but an exploration of how humans construct and maintain their self-image, even while committing morally questionable acts, revealing the extraordinary capacity of the human mind to rationalize and compartmentalize behavior that would otherwise be psychologically unbearable. The final chapters of Look Closer explore how Simon and Vicky move forward after their crimes. Rather than enjoying the fruits of their elaborate scheme, both characters seek a form of redemption through generosity and new beginnings. Simon donates his entire inheritance to charities, refusing to keep a penny of that money tainted by his father's betrayal and his own actions. Vicky plans to move in with her brother-in-law Adam and her nieces around Thanksgiving, helping them financially and emotionally while finding purpose in caring for her sister's children. Their final meeting at a Wisconsin forest preserve represents the culmination of their shared conspiracy, but also their diverging paths. Vicky appears radiantly happy, a version of herself Simon has never seen before. They discuss their actions, Simon's revenge against Lauren and his father, Vicky's vengeance against Nick for what he did to Monica, and find a measure of peace in their justifications. Yet there's an undercurrent of loss and regret beneath their apparent closure. Simon didn't get the professorship, despite being cleared of suspicion in his father's murder. Vicky must continue living under a false identity, always at risk of discovery. Their kiss goodbye suggests lingering feelings, but they separate nonetheless, choosing different futures despite their profound connection through shared crimes. As Simon watches Vicky drive away in a minivan, he distracts himself with pedantic thoughts about the meaning of the word pithy, revealing his continuing tendency to use intellectual analysis as a shield against emotional vulnerability. This final scene suggests that while they may have achieved their revenge, true peace remains elusive. The perfect crime has been committed, justice of a sort has been served, but the psychological toll of their actions will follow them into their separate futures.